Good afternoon, and from our brand new offices on the Bohemian Highway in Occidental, California, it's the HR Examiner radio show. You'll notice the sound of the new offices because you can hear that slight echo in the background. This is our first broadcast, and the radio show is all that's in the booth right now. Before we get started, I want to tell you that you can unlimit your search. IT positions come with very specific skill requirements, so having an extensive pool of technology candidates is essential to recruiting top talent. Dice's new open web search tool pulls together profiles for millions of active and passive tech candidates from 50 social sites, so you can easily access them all in one spot. Unlimit your tech talent search at dice.com/openweb. Millions more candidates visit dice.com/openweb. So today we've got Brian Chaney, who is one of the most interesting voices in the tech recruiting world. Brian holds himself up in Austin, Texas, and he has, in a very short while, toured some interesting places in the recruitosphere. Brian, why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So first of all, I'm very very honored to be the first guest in your new world headquarters.
It's wonderful. This is not quite Armadillo World Headquarters, but it's damn close.
So definitely congrats on the new location. And I would say that technical recruiting is always part of any good organization's repertoire, but I think part of the unique perspective that I bring to technical recruiting is really around how you manage the brand and the messaging, because there's a lot of noise in the technical recruiting world. My background is a little more on the marketing side, and that's actually how I got into recruiting almost 9 years ago. So I actually started within managing tactical marketing, recruitment marketing campaigns for an RPO provider here in Texas. One I think that you're familiar with, John, do you remember?
Oh yeah, Devotis, and that's run by Mike Mayu, who is one of the unsung heroes of the business, I think.
That's true. So I spent a lot of time cutting teeth on some tactical marketing campaigns and learned for a lot of different types of companies, learned what made sense from messaging, not only from marketing perspective, but also from a technical perspective, right? So how do you source the talent? How do you communicate to the talent?
Okay, so you got your start by coming in as a marketing guy. You've been in recruiting for 9 years. I don't know if you know this, but the average professional career of a recruiter is slightly less than 3 years. People come, they get a little taste of it, and they bail as soon as they can find an opportunity. What keeps you here?
So I think it's really understanding the perspective of the people that I'm trying to reach. I think getting into the motivators, being able to connect people with roles that really light a fire in their belly and help them move their career forward. I know that's the very PC, warm and fuzzy answer, but I think being able to look at things from a marketing perspective and see things from different points of view, I think that's really helped. I think if I just sat in a recruiter's seat, I might not still be in the industry. But I think that's what keeps me here.
So that's cool. And part of what you're saying is that as the industry grows and finds its way, there are more and more interesting kinds of slots that you can fill. So sitting in a chair as a recruiter is now hardly the only way to find your place in the industry. That's cool. It's a good reminder, really. So how does tech recruiting How's it different from other kinds of recruiting? What's the big difference to you?
So the huge difference to me is that technical recruiting is regular recruiting with way more acronyms. And what I mean by that is, we all have motivators and priorities. Like I said, technical talent is the highest peak it's been at in all the 9 years that I've been in the recruiting world. I think it's a matter of being able to cut through that noise and speak to those motivators, if that makes sense.
Sure. So some of it is acronyms, and you can fake your way with acronyms, but you really got to be able to tell if somebody knows their stuff. How do you do that?
So when I'm talking to someone, I ask them how they would explain a key function of the role to a small child, to their niece, their nephew, or their son or daughter. And if they can explain it simply and succinctly, I know they get it. If they complicate it, it means they either don't get it, they don't understand it, or they're not a successful communicator. And that can actually, affect other qualifiers for the role, meaning, they might need to be a successful communicator in their role, or they might not. And that really gives me a lot of information that I can use in more than one way.
Okay, so you figured out that they're qualified somehow. Now you're stuck with the question that you just raised. How do you tell if somebody's going to work out? How do you do that?
So a lot of it has to come from the conversations that I have with the hiring manager. And I had one this morning, actually, with a hiring manager who was looking for a very specific skill set. And I found that, taking really great judgment to understand fit, well, there's a saying that really great judgment comes from experience. And a lot of that experience comes from really bad judgment, right? You have to skin your knees to know how to make the right decisions. And the hiring manager that I talked to this morning is a young CEO who was looking to hire a marketing executive with a certain design aesthetic. And she knew exactly what she didn't want, because of hiring mistakes that she had made before. And she went even on to talk about the clothes that the person wore, to the information that it was in an email exchange, all these little things that you pick up around what works and what doesn't for your culture.
That's interesting. That particular choice, the first real marketing executive you hire when you're getting your company started, that's a really hard one to get right. So in that case, marketing is the technology, and your role is to figure out a lot more than just does this fit the CEO's specs, isn't it?
Correct. So not just does this person have industry experience within manufacturing, within the home goods arena, but does this person understand what it takes from a fashion and design perspective, not only for their own person, but for the companies that they've represented, and can they speak to that level, right? And I think that really applies not just to design or manufacturing, but I think that applies to a lot of things in how you carry yourself, how you present yourself. That can really affect perception.
I think this is actually really interesting, and it applies across the board in tech hires. When you hire a marketing person for that kind of slot, often the CEO will say, "What I want is a new director of marketing." And so when you hire directors of marketing, you get people who don't do marketing; they manage people. it's usually the case that what companies on their first hire need is not somebody to manage other people, but it's actually somebody to do marketing. And so you end up with this really difficult communications problem. I've seen a ton of startups cycle through four or five people in that role because what they say they want and what they actually need are so discrepant. That makes sense?
It does. It does. Because you have to be able to understand whether you need someone who's a contributor with their eye on management or a manager who just needs to hire contributors.
Right, and if you end up with a manager who needs to hire contributors when you're a small startup and it's going to be years before the marketing department is more than two or three people, you are just up the creek.
Yeah, you went real fast.
Right, and the problem is that it takes – this is the big problem in recruiting in general is it takes 6 or 8 months to unscrew up something that's screwed up.
And key example in point, the person that the CEO had hired previously was there for less than 2 months, and she ended up actually paying him 6 months severance because he had moved his whole family, and that was a huge mistake, a huge correction that she had to take based on that decision.
Right. So that means that in order to I think this is really germane to the whole technical recruiting thing. In order to get the right person in the slot, you really have to understand what the job means. And what the job means in the context of the projects being done. As great as hiring managers are, half of what the recruiter brings to the party is experience that's larger than the hiring manager has.
Right.
Yeah.
And being able to communicate what's next, right? What's next outside
right.
of this role?
Exactly. And you know, particularly when you're dealing with small companies or startups, it's often hard for great executives in startups to really understand what's next. A lot of what great CEOs in small companies and startups are magnificent at is driving in the fog. And there may be patterns that are repeated everywhere, but when you're in the middle of the fog, it feels like you're the only one who's ever been in the fog. And so a great recruiter can help you sort that out. That's a really critical role for any leadership function, huh?
Absolutely. And I think being not just a sounding board, but also being able to feed back the information, because a lot of times the hiring manager they're just thinking about filling that slot. And getting them to think about, especially if there's a series of hires, and you have to continually progress with the type of skill, the type of talent and experience that you're looking for, you need to keep them thinking about, hey, these are the types of roles that we're going to be looking for in the next 3 to 6 months. So how do we start cultivating these relationships, and really build think about a low-tech version of candidate pipelining, right? How do we manage these relationships long-term because we know where we're ultimately going to be?
So do you have any – I'm gonna pop you one more and then I have to break and remind everybody where we are. But do you have any ideas about – besides just raw volume of experience – are there things that a developing recruiter can do to grow their judgment?
To grow their judgment? That's a big question.
Yeah. So the problem with experience is if I'm trying to learn how to use a hammer and I hit my thumb with the hammer 100 times, I probably haven't actually learned very much, right? And so there's some feedback loop besides just experience that helps you profit from the experience. And I'm wondering if there are, like, can you sit down in a food court in a mall and watch people and learn how to judge them better? Have you ever tried doing something like that?
I do it all the time. I do it as a marketer. I think about how people react in all these different situations and why they react the way that they do. So really it is understanding people and seeing them, seeing how they ask for things and how they respond to specific questions. So I think recruiters are really students of people in general. I think keeping a student mentality when it comes to even the simplest of tasks can really help understand why people are doing things the way they're doing and what they're not saying, right? So it's not just, hey, here's something that a hiring manager is actively telling me that I need to pay attention to, but here are the things that the hiring manager is not saying or that they're tiptoeing around that I need to key in on as well.
Cool. So I'm going to take a moment here and remind everyone that you're listening to the HR Examiner radio show. We're coming to you live from Occidental, California on the Bohemian Highway, where we're speaking with Brian Chaney today. There are too many sites and too little time. The problem we all face in today's tech recruiting landscape is so many sites to search, but too little time. Our friends at Dice have a solution. Dice's new open web search tool streamlines the process. It gathers info from 50 different social sites, such as Facebook, Google+, and GitHub, and creates one super profile for each tech professional. Save time searching through unqualified clutter at dice.com/openweb. More efficient searches. Learn more at dice.com/openweb. So, Brian, I'm gonna now run completely outside of the script and ask you about a couple of things that are sort of my pet peeves. And so the first one is mobile recruiting. Do you think it's a thing? You know, and why is it important?
So there's a stat, and you know stats are great, right? So all it takes is 89% of stats are made up on the spot.
That's a quote from me.
All that said, I did intend to give you attribution for that quote, by the way, John. The majority and almost 80% of recruitment communications from corporate America, right? And we were just talking about, we'll just talk about the states for right now. Almost 80% of communication, email communication, is read on a mobile device, on a phone or tablet. And when you look at that and you realize that what you're asking talent to do is click on a link or respond or apply, you want them to be able to do that the easiest and shortest route possible. And so my response is mobile recruiting a thing? Mobile recruiting is as much of a thing as social recruiting. It's a channel. It's a method of communication to reach the people that you want to hire. So is it important? Yeah. Do you have to be there? Yes. Is it important for people to apply via their mobile device? It's not critical, it's helpful, but having a mobile-friendly site is absolutely critical. Because if what you're asking people to do is not displayed correctly, is not showing up the way that you want it to show up, if your message is being garbled, then that kills your momentum.
So that's my
long answer to a very short question.
That's okay, because we're not done. So on the one hand, for the last 15 years, all I have heard about is how horrible it is to use a job board because you get so many people applying, right? I mean, that is the the largest customer critique of a job board. It's so easy to apply that you get buried in resumes. Now I hear, and you're not the only one who says this. I'm actually probably the only person who takes the position that I'm taking right now. You say, gosh, what we really need to do is make it easy for people to apply. And I think to myself, wow, that's, like, stupid. Easy to apply means more crap to sort through. And if you say easy to apply, and then you go along with this other sort of strange notion, which is that everybody who happens onto your link to click it is entitled to respect at a customer experience that will grow and get better and better. I think you just opened a hole in the bottom of a recruiting department's wallet that won't ever close. Because the premise is we're going to make it easier and easier and easier to apply, and then we're going to give status, value, and benefit to everybody who does that. Now if I did that with the homeless people in San Francisco, the city would be overrun. Right, there's limits to resources, and easy doesn't seem to me to be the right direction to go. I think I want to get the right people applying, and I don't see how you do that. If you make it easy, how do you get the right people in? And that's right in your sweet spot, right?
Yes, and that's kind of the point. A lot of the companies that I talk to have engineered that same problem, right? They'll have these notable brands. They'll have a measure of traffic already to their open jobs, so they get they'll get 200-400 people or more applying to a specific role, but they're not necessarily the right people. They're people who want a job at the company, and so to your point, yes, if you lower the hurdle to a certain degree, you want to make sure that there's a filtering mechanism there. There's a screen out mechanism, a way to vet that talent, and whether that's an automated system or whether that's a recruiter or someone within the process, that's obviously one of the hardest parts. So the more people you put into the process, the more of a bottleneck that one recruiter could become.
Okay, so why isn't the right thing to do? So I know that everybody has a cell phone. I'm not living in the dark ages, but that doesn't tell me that it's a good channel for recruiting. It doesn't tell me that it's a necessary channel for recruiting. It just tells me that there are a number of other things that people all have, and we don't use them as recruiting channels. So just the sheer fact that everybody has one isn't interesting to me. Why wouldn't it be prudent to have a single mobile compliant page that is triggered when somebody hits the website with a mobile device that says, you know what, we don't want you to apply for this job while you're driving, and we actually would like you to think about the job because we don't want just anybody to apply. So when you get home, if you could remember that you want to work for us when you get home or when you get to a device where it's smart to look at and think about whether or not you want to apply, please apply. Otherwise, nice to meet you. Why wouldn't that be the right answer?
And sometimes it is. But also, not everyone is driving while they're on their mobile device. A lot of people are on their, whether it's a tablet or they're sitting in a doctor's waiting room or what have you, right? They've got a specific amount of time. They probably don't have their resume on hand in a shareable format, but I honestly think, and that's actually something that that we set up for Aon when I was managing Aon Careers was a process for the mobile friendly site to share all the information, make sure the jobs were searchable and displayed so that they were easily found, but also when they get to the point of saying that they want to indicate an interest, that the the call to action wasn't to apply right then. The call to action was to share the job via email or text so that they could apply when it was convenient, when they had access to the right systems, when they had time, when they were safe.
So how many people did Aon hire who went through that process? So let's say they're sitting in the doctor's office waiting for the oncology report. They're looking at their tablet. They notice an Aon job and they click on it. They go through. Now, really? That happens a lot. That happens enough to make it an investment in process and design, and you get the right kinds of candidates that way.
Around emailing the job to themselves? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Does it work? I guess does it work, and does it produce great employees?
So the trick is figuring out, okay, between mobile versus desktop, who's making the best hires, right? And that's a longer term conversation. So that's actually not something that we got into. We knew that the mobile piece was almost 35% of our traffic. So we knew that mobile was a big driver. So making sure that the site was mobile friendly and optimized. It was actually a responsive site that we had, so it was versatile across platforms. But we knew that there was over a third of our traffic was coming from mobile, but we weren't able to connect that dot to a specific number of hires versus desktop, if that's what you're asking.
So that's what drives me crazy. There is a uniform belief that mobile interaction is absolutely necessary, and there's no data to support it. The only data that exists is that there's a chunk of traffic coming to the website from mobile devices. There's no data that says you get better candidates that way. It's all just evangelism, and it's taken root in a very, very interesting way. And my sense is that it hurts recruiting when you don't have clear returns and clear quantitative stories to tell, and instead everybody is just like lemmings running over the edge of the cliff because the conventional wisdom has become you've got to do it this way without evidence. So, anyhow, I think you and I could have that conversation in a very interesting way for another show, and we ought to do that.
I'm definitely down with doing that because I think that driving metrics behind any argument is the way that you don't lose the argument.
Say again?
I think when you have the numbers to back up your statements, I think that's the way to really prove yourself and let the data speak, right? So I agree with you on that point. Why would you want to invest a crazy amount of dollars and time for something that doesn't substantiate a quality hire? So I'm definitely down with having that discussion again.
Great. So it was a lot of fun having you on the show today, Brian. Thanks for coming along. Thanks for being the first guest in our brand new Occidental offices, and for the recruiting animal, it's a momentary thing. You're getting to hear it live from Occidental for the first time. So, Brian, thanks for being such a great sport, and we'll talk to you later. I want to remind everybody that you have been listening to the HR Examiner radio show. We're brought to you by Dice, who says social recruiting is critical to finding not only good candidates, but the right candidate for your technology positions. Discover undiscoverable candidates with Dice's new open web search tool. It gives you a clear picture of tech professionals' lives online so you can find the best fit. Find the right tech candidates at dice.com/openweb. Discover the undiscoverable. Go to dice.com/openweb. And with that, we're going to wish you a great weekend. This is John Sumser signing off for the HR Examiner radio show.